All right, good morning, and welcome to session 132, the LDS Democratic, we'll just say Dems office, and its history and where it's going next. I'm Tamara Taysom, and I'll be chairing this session. We ask you to turn off your cell phones during the session, and I guess that's the main reminder. Without further ado, then, I'll introduce the panelists. Greg Janis, is that right?
Craig
Janis is the founder and CEO of Fubeca Labs.
Fubeca.
A web and mobile development firm and the LDS Outreach Director for the Utah Democratic Party. Greg earned both his undergraduate degree in political science and his law degree from BYU and served 2 years in Brazil on an LDS mission. Before his current position, Greg spent time in a variety of legal, political, and tech jobs in Utah and around the world. Greg lives in South Jordan with his wife, Kathleen.
Caitlin,
and their two sons, Mason and Charlie. Crystal Young
Otterstrom
is an all-around marketer with experience in branding, copywriting, event planning, affinity groups, market research and focus groups, PR. Wow, this is a very long list. I'm already overwhelmed. Social media, graphic design, direct marketing, and guerrilla non-traditional marketing. Wow. Maybe she can explain that. She's a partner in the cause marketing firm Foresight Partners and an administrative director for Utah Cultural Alliance and a consultant for the Utah Symphony, Utah, and the Utah Opera. Clients include the Utah Chamber Artists, the Salt Lake County Zoo, Arts and Parks, Sarasota Symphony, Greenville Symphony, the Glenn Miller Orchestra, Fifth Pass, the Utah Democratic Party, and countless political campaigns, among other clients. Otterstrom is now the official event planner for the Utah Democratic Party and the acting chair of the LDS Dems.
Oh, I'm the chair now.
You are the chair. Oh,
we should change
the latest information is that she is now the chair. Prior to having a daughter in 2010, Otterstrom spent 6 years as an audience development and print media manager at the Utah Symphony, Utah Opera. She headed print advertising, outdoor campaigns, guerrilla and non-traditional advertising, student marketing, young professional marketing, social media, community outreach, and cross promotions. Well, there, Otterstrom founded the
Vivace.
Oh, Vivace. Oh, I never would have gotten that. And the largest group of its kind west of the Mississippi, which reaches out to 20 to 40 year old Utah residents to share their interest in classical music and become regular patrons of the Utah Symphony and the Utah Opera. Performances. Otterstrom founded the Utah Symphony and Utah Opera's cadenzas programs for the 55 and older in the 2010 and 2011 season. It's now in its second season. She's the co-founder of marketing, co-founder and marketing director of Salty Cricket Composers Collective, a new Utah performing ensemble that only performs the works of composers currently living in Utah. We'll turn our time over to our panelists. They each have a presentation, and then we'll have time at the end for questions. Thanks.
Just really quick before I get started, I should clarify, I'm not actually working for the Democratic Party any longer. I was the LDS Outreach Director, now I'm doing other things not for the party, but I still work with the caucus, which is why I'm here. And also, we are okay if you have questions during our presentation. If you want to raise your hand, we'll take them then. If there's too many questions, we might move it to the end, but seeing as how there's not a ton of you, it's okay if you want to ask questions during the actual presentation.
Do you want us to come up to the mic and ask the questions, or do you want us to...
Just raise your hand.
Just stand.
You're fine.
This is being recorded.
Should we stand, or should we sit?
It's up to you.
I'll stand over here. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Great. So we were asked by Sunstone to give this presentation today about our new LDS Dems caucus. How many of you knew that we existed? four. Yes. So we're going to talk a little bit about our history and our organizational structure and kind of our goals. We're going to talk about the LDS voter and their issues, what are important to them, how to reach out to them, how to talk to them. And we're going to talk about trends moving forward that make things look more positive for us. So first, our history. We exist, as the first bullet point says, because of a gay ex-Mormon. Our party chair is Jim DeBacchus, and he's actually BYU alumna, like Craig and my alumnus, like Craig and myself. He became the party chair a year ago July, and his number one issue that he really wanted to do was really focus the party's efforts on reaching out to LDS voters. Because face it, if the Democratic Party doesn't do that, we have nowhere to go. We're such a super minority. We've got to start reaching out more and more and more to LDS voters. And it's really great because, you know, I've been involved in the Democratic Party for a while. And there's been a lot of us involved. Paul in the back is on our executive committee. And we've all been wanting, you know, an LDS Dems caucus for quite some time. And we've had pushback for various reasons. And so it was really great for Jim DeBacchus to just get us going. And so our first event was kind of early July. It was actually right before Jim was elected chair. He was getting people together. And we met at the home of Sam and Diane Stewart. It's this beautiful home in the Avenues. We had about 45 people there. Jim gave an introduction. He said, I don't care if you're a caucus or if you're a club, but I prefer you to be a caucus. And he's like, I want you guys to just start meeting and figure out what you want to do. And so we had a really great meeting. It actually turned into kind of a testimony meeting where we talked about why we're LDS Democrats. So everyone shared their testimony, why the Democratic Party is true. And it was pretty great. And we were all very enthused. And from that group, an executive committee, we called ourselves interim until we had our official elections, which actually were only just this past June. So we formed an executive committee where we worked on formalizing our organization, getting a number of activities going in our first year, and writing our bylaws. And our first event was October 1st, and it was a pre-general conference breakfast in Murray Park. Perhaps you heard about it. Trisha Beck, who's our activities chair, she planned it. She's like, maybe 50 people will come. We'll be happy with that. And I said, you know what? I think we should plan for 200. And I'm glad we did, because we had 200 people, so we would have run out of pancakes. So we served pancakes and breakfast items, and everything was cooked by our Democratic elected officials, who are also LDS. Most of them are, actually. It was just a huge success. And from that moment, we've been growing by leaps and bounds. We'll talk about numbers in a minute. We became a real caucus on October 15th. We were voted in by the Central Committee of the Democratic Party unanimously on October 15th. So that was pretty exciting. So that's when we became an official caucus. So we've already talked about the General Conference breakfast. So kind of as a goal, I'll try to keep this more straight. As a statewide committee, we try to have four events a year. And then we have regional committees that kind of mirror that number of events. Just really quickly about our structure. So we are chaired by an executive committee, and then we have an outreach committee, which is chaired by Craig right here. And he has a co-chair who's unofficial because of his job. He can't have an official position, so I won't name him. But he works with Craig on that. And then our activities chair is Trisha Beck, who's a former representative down in Sanity, an amazing woman. And then we also have a fundraising committee. So our outreach committee, their task, we've kind of paraphrased the church's goals. So the outreach committee, you know, their job is to proclaim the gospel. And activities, we perfect saints. So, and we do service, too. That's, you know, the church's fourth platform now. So we had a Martin Luther King Day Jr., Martin Luther King Jr. Day of service, the weekend of Martin Luther King Day. And it was a statewide service project. We had projects in Weber, in Cache, in Utah County, in Salt Lake County. And then that culminated on a Sunday night with a fireside where we had Darius Gray, we had Kathy Stokes, we had Chase Peterson, and we had Ronald Coleman, who's a professor here at the U. Am I leaving anybody out? I don't think so.
You might be.
I might be. I can't remember. But it was really good. very inspiring. And we're already in plans already, and we have a very cool speaker.
Can I announce him? He's confirmed, right?
Maybe not. I don't know.
Okay, stay tuned. Get on our email list, lesms.org. It's very exciting, though. Our keynote speaker, let me tell you. And then we had a number of activities during convention season. Craig and Andrew Morales, who's one of our other LES field organizers, went to conventions all across the state, talked about LESMs. At the Salt Lake County conventions and the state conventions, we blew everybody away by how big our caucus meetings were. We were by far the biggest caucus. We had to, they had us in this small classroom at the Salt Lake County convention, and we had a backup plan in place, luckily, because I was like, you know, Laura, I think we're going to be bigger than that classroom. So they stuck us in the auditorium to share the space with the labor caucus. But so now, you know, we've only existed since August, but we're already the largest caucus in the Democratic Party. And then same goes for state convention. It was absolutely huge. So now I'll tell you a little bit about our membership organization. So we're around 2,000 members. We have daily growth. And only about 136 of those don't get emails, which is how we primarily communicate with our membership, although we're about to launch a very big outreach effort, which Craig is going to talk about. We now have official regional committees in Utah County and Weber County and Davis County and Tooele County. If any of you live in Cache, that's really where we want to go next, as well as Washington County, if you have people down there. They're meeting regularly. Utah County Committee meets monthly. Tooele and Davis are still getting underway. They're having their first meetings in August. We have a broad spectrum of ages, and actually, people would assume that maybe we would skew younger, since younger people tend to be more liberal, but actually, young voters are a pretty small minority of our caucus, actually.
Yeah.
The reason I think that that's the case is that traditionally, young voters have been very involved in things like Young Democrats or College Democrats and things like that, whereas older voters or people who aren't in school anymore, they haven't really had an organization to be a part of. And so I think that a lot of our membership is people who might have been involved in something like that before if it existed, but never had the chance.
And speaking of that, I forgot to even mention our twofold purpose. So our first purpose is to provide a space for LES voters within the Democratic Party. We've heard from so many people of our members who are like, you know, I've always wanted to get involved in the Democratic Party, but I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And so our first goal is to provide a home for them, to provide a space for them within the party. And then our second goal, of course, is to convince more LES voters to vote for Democrats. So we have a broad spectrum of ages, although we tend to be middle-aged and older for the most part. We're a big tent. You know, we do, of course, we are Democrats, but you'll find progressive Democrats, you'll find conservative Democrats, you'll find moderate Democrats. There's a lot of independents. We have a lot of Republicans who are members of our caucus, but who are feeling uncomfortable with their party in Utah, and so they're like, you know what, I'm going to get involved in the LESM's caucus. And then our last bullet point, a very common conversion story is people who are former members of the Republican Party. Yes?
Would you characterize most of your members as being active, inactive, or all over the place?
You know, that's actually not a question we've asked of our membership, but when I talk to them, it seems like most of them tend to be active. It is officially in our bylaws that you do not have to be LDS to be a member of our caucus, so we actually have some people who don't even have any connection, you know, they're not former Mormons or anything, who are just involved with our caucus because they feel like this is the place to be. Curtis Herrington is an example of that. He's a member of our executive committee. He's written on his blog why he belongs to our committee. It's called Blue and Red Zion. Do you have a question? Yeah.
Actually, I gave myself a calling when we were having the local caucuses, and yeah. I just put together a table for LDS Dems and gathered what I could and got some stickers and got a sign-up sheet. And as you know, I think that night I got about 36.
This is at your mass meetings, right?
Mass meetings. Yeah. I got about 36 people signed up. And of those people, you know, I've had a chance to talk to some of them. One was a member of my state presidency. Mm-hmm. I had at least 3 Relief Society presidents. I had a temple worker and somebody who gives tours at the conference center. And those are the ones that I knew, kind of knew what they were doing. So there are all kinds of, a lot of people are really active.
Absolutely. In fact, we...
And I'm a gospel doctor teacher.
Good job. Thank you for what you did. I want to talk about mass meetings for a second. First of all, another one of our kind of goals we have as an executive committee is we're trying to get all of our members to have a calling. Every member calling. Is that what President Hinckley said? Because we really want them to work in the caucus. But the second thing about mass meetings, I do want to talk about that really fast. How many of you know what a mass meeting is? Yeah? Okay, about half. So I'll explain. So, you know, in Utah, candidates are elected at convention for the most part, unless they don't get a certain percentage of the votes, so then it goes to a primary, and delegates are elected to vote in conventions, and they're elected at the precinct level at your annual, no, it's not annual, every 2 years, Paul? 2 years is your mass meeting. And I'm sure you read about it in the paper, but both parties had huge turnouts at their mass meetings. My precinct usually... you know, I've been through, I think, 3 or 4 mass meetings, and where I just sold my condo, so now I'm going to be in a very different precinct. It's actually a very active precinct, but historically, it was always just my husband and I who showed up, and sometimes our bishop and his wife, Sylvia Allred, you know, who used to be our first counselor, generally cited, they're very big Democrats. So sometimes they showed up, but usually it's just Joel and I. And then, but this last mass meeting, we had over 40 people in our precinct show up. It was unreal. It was amazing. Somehow I still made it through as a delegate, but it was amazing. So definitely, I think there is an increased desire to get involved on the grassroots level. And certainly, and a large part of that is because the church put a big focus on mass meetings. There was a lot of letters, you know, read to congregations. And so certainly a large percentage of our Democratic delegates right now are LDS. So that's really changing things. Let's do the next slide. Okay, so now I'm going to... Oh, it got cut off a little bit.
Can we just grab this text over a little bit?
So now I'm going to talk about kind of the Utah's electorate. That works. Now we can see it. Voting patterns over the last 30 years, there's been kind of this New West movement. Colorado, New Mexico, and Nevada are becoming increasingly blue. Even Arizona is becoming a little bit less red. Utah has not seen that change that the rest of the New West has. You know, Colorado was a big player in the most recent election. You know, they really helped elect the president. And although Utah is seeing similar demographic changes in terms of an increased Latino audience, an increased younger average voter, it's not translating into Democratic votes.
Next.
Yes. All right. See if I can see this sideways. Actually, it'll probably be easier if I look over here. So about 62.4% of Utahns are LDS, with about 42% of those being self-designated as active. But then still about 69% of active voters in Utah identify as LDS. So of the percentage of Utahns who vote, they tend to be more LDS than not. And nearly 90% of those who are active voters claim to attend at least one or more church services a week. So the average Utah voter is an active member of the LDS church. And as you can see by the numbers, they're quite, you know, depressing for us. With only 2.68% of very likely LDS voters identifying as Democrats in Utah. Yeah.
Really quick, what is the percentage of Nevada and California? Has anybody ever done a comparison statistical analysis?
I'm sure that exists. I don't know. Do you know, Craig?
These numbers came from polling done by people here in Utah, so they didn't look at other states. But I'm sure that you could find similar numbers for other states by other people.
I don't know. I think once you get outside of Idaho and Utah, if you're in Illinois, let's say, or Florida, you're more likely to be, you know, at least 30%, 35%,
40%. Yeah, well, actually, Craig's going to talk about those numbers later, but nationally, 17% of Latter-day Saints identify as Democrats. In Utah, that number, is 7%. So kind of one of our goals of the caucus is to go from 7 to 17.
And that 17% includes Utah. So if you take Utah out of the numbers, it's somewhere in the mid-20s, actually, that's Democrats.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Craig and I are not from Utah, so maybe that plays into that. Question back.
What's the somewhat likely?
Somewhat likely means they're a somewhat likely LDS person. These, I think the lower numbers come from probably vote builder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these aren't, when this was done, it wasn't, we weren't 100% positive who was LDS and who wasn't, right? So they used different factors to try and figure out who was LDS and then assign these numbers. So they're very likely to be LDS. It's probably because they're getting the Ensign delivered to their house or something, right? And
it's
somewhat
based
likely
off of consumer
maybe
data,
you
right?
live in, yeah, it's based off of consumer data. So that's how they're approximating it, which is why you'll see, you know, the actual percentage of Democrats is 7%. But if you were to look at this, you'd think it should only be 2.5%, right? So so these numbers that you're seeing in the table aren't perfectly accurate of who's LDS and who's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, the table on the left isn't a survey. It's just based off of consumer data. The numbers at the top are off of surveys. And so you'll see the differences in candidate performance, and this is something I'm going to talk about a little bit. About how candidates can make themselves more attractive to LDS voters. So obviously Congressman Matheson is our best Democrat at speaking to LDS voters since he can get 42% support from active LDS voters, whereas Peter Caroon in the governor election can only get 18% statewide. So Matheson, he's an example of, he knows what he's doing. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the LDS voter and what issues are important to them. I'm going to talk a little bit about a little bit about messaging, but Craig is mostly going to talk about that. So for the LDS voter, a lot of this information comes from some Dan Jones polls that happened in 2008, 2010. I think there's one that goes back to 2000 to some of this information, but and the polling is showing that yes, we have a steep hill to climb, but it's looking better than we think it does. So we already said, you know, 69% of Utah's LDS, 70%, which is a Republican candidate over a Democratic candidate, you know, only 15 to 20%, which is a Democrat or remain undecided. About 70% of LDS voters think Utah is going in the right direction. So if you start out by saying you think Utah is failing at something or you think Utah is going in the wrong direction, you've already lost the voter's attention. So you need to say, sure, Utah's doing great things. Utah's doing great things with education, with social programs, with whatever. But we could do even better. So instead of saying we're going, this is wrong, we need to say, let's make it even better. Otherwise, you lose their attention from the moment you start talking to them. 60%, though, think the nation is going in the wrong direction. So there's this you know, kind of paradox between what they think about the state versus the nation. A lot of them talk about, when you look at the comments from the surveys, a lot of them talk about being in like a, they think we're in like a Book of Mormon-esque pride cycle as a nation, and we need to, you know, get out of that, where it goes from like growth and prosperity to pride, which leads to some kind of, you know, war or humbling or famine or whatever. And then they return to humility and all that sort of a thing. So they're also concerned about a general lack of caring. The vast majority are discontent with all political parties, including the Republican Party, which is why you saw so many engaging with the Tea Party in 2010. But as we saw here in 2012, there's more moderate Republican delegate base. So there's some pull away from the Tea Party lately, but there is still a general discontent with all parties, especially on the national level for both parties. Most feel that both federal Republicans and Democrats are beholden for why this nation is going in the wrong direction. They think they're greedy, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But I think there is some pullback from that when you just see, you know, when you see how well Orrin Hatch survived the primary, how he made out of convention, whereas 2010, Bob Bennett, you know, was out in the first round. So it's changing a little bit.
But, you know, that was all about big money.
Yeah.
With tobacco and all the rest of pharmaceutical companies. And
oh, yeah. Orrin Hatch had a machine going for many years. He had 2010 as a lesson, for sure. But all the money that Bob Bennett had at his trust didn't help him in 2010.
Right.
So, yeah, it was... 2010 was new territory.
At least the Tea Party's more honest than Hatch. I was really hoping they'd knock him off.
Do you want to go back and run that one down? Yeah. And then less than a third think a candidate should talk about religious faith openly, so they really don't want you to say in your campaign materials, I'm LDS, I'm a bishop, whatever. That does not approve. That does not approve. Women and the elderly are more open to Democrats than men are, interestingly enough. Okay, next slide. So now I'm going to talk about some of the words they like to hear. They love to hear self-reliance. Whenever you talk about welfare or any kind of help for poverty, talk about self-reliance in the same sentence. You start saying programs, they hear government wants to take over your lives instead of America wants to help poor people become more self-reliant. So you've got to say self-reliance, agency and freedom, family. I mean, these are all obvious things, but whatever you throw those words into things, you can get away with a lot. I mean, I recently worked on the Sully County platform. Man, I threw family in there as often as I could convince the rest of the committee to let me throw it in there. Because family applies to education, it applies to economic issues, it applies to transportation issues. So those are three values that are very important. And then here's a number of words that play better with LDS voters. You know, say America instead of federal government has a duty to, say America has a duty to. Say neighbor versus citizen. You know, citizen, they start hearing socialism and communism. So you say, let's help our fellow neighbors instead of let's help our fellow citizens. They want to say, you know, say America has a shared responsibility of compassion to help its poor instead of saying the federal government should have programs that help the poor. They are interested in sustainability and stewardship and responsibility. You know, there are a lot of scriptural admonitions around taking care of the environment. But then they hear environmental protection and they just hear, like, you know, big government programs taking over. So it's talk about how they have a stewardship of the earth, how they, you know, we have to make it sustainable for our future families, that sort of thing. Trust, shared values, putting people before self. Overall, LDS voters in Utah think Republicans encourage citizens to be more self-reliant than Democrats. Whereas, you know, a Democrat would say, if we don't help people, they're never going to get to self-reliance. Whereas the Republican just says, let them throw themselves, you know, and they'll figure it out. And so we need to really change how we are the party of self-reliance. We're helping them to be better. And as my friend Trisha Beck, she has a wonderful phrase that works really well. She likes to say, we give them a hand up to avoid a hand out later. And that works really well. I've heard her say that to all sorts of conservative voters, and she has a very conservative district, and that phrase really works. Their most important values, of course, are free agency, unconditional love, eternal goals, faith, not fear, responsibility, and service. Okay. And then here's a few more other things. When you look at the data, when you talk to an LDS voter, they're surprisingly a lot more moderate, maybe even liberal than you would think. It's really the social issues that get a lot of them stuck, of course. And then after that social litmus test, when it comes to economics, when it comes to issues, economics is the number one issue. Some other issues that rank importantly, and then the same survey kind of ranked them on moral issues, too. And some issues were really surprisingly ranked as high moral issues, and other issues that you thought would be considered a moral issue, while it was an important issue, it was not a moral issue. So oil price gas was very important. Protecting the U.S., preserving Utah's water supply, curbing illegal immigration, investing in public education. And this is one I was shocked on, that does not rank as a moral issue. So they don't think of education as a moral issue. Same with giving teachers a livable wage. There we go. While that's important, it's not seen as a moral issue. Lowering healthcare costs, again, is not seen as a moral issue. Limiting the influence of powerful lobbyists. They want a candidate who defends the common man before big business. Holding down taxes, restoring faith in government, and gun control. Doesn't list too high, but it is a fairly important issue. Of course, more than to them. And so here are some things. The LDS voter will consider a Democrat who does some of these things. So they endorse a self-reliant U.S. that ends dependence on foreign oil through renewable energy sources. Now, that's a very liberal concept. And that's something that did very well with voters, and so it gets to that self-reliance thing. They like the idea of, well, if we're going towards sustainability, well, then that helps the U.S. become more self-reliant. So that self-reliance really communicates. They support cracking down on lobbyists and special interests. You know, that applies into that whole Mormon fear of, you know, secret combinations. And here we had Alec in town yesterday. Speaking out of it. Just kidding. And then proposes tough fines on businesses which hire illegal immigrants. I think this is, I mean, this is from 2010 to 2008. I don't know if that would be so big now after the Utah Compact and things like that have kind of made immigration kind of a past issue in Utah, but I don't know. Believes that communities and neighborhoods are better at fixing social problems than government. Pledged to investigate price gouging by oil companies and follows the LDS Church's stance on both abortion and gay marriage. And Craig's going to talk about some ways about how to talk about that later. And then the personality test. This is really important, actually. They can ignore a host of issues if the candidate matches this personality thing that they're working towards. And so as Craig's going to talk about, it's really about the candidates who get out there and talk to voters on a personal basis are the candidates who do a really good job. I mean, I think that's one reason why Matheson does such a great job, because nobody gets out on the ground better than Matheson does. He's amazing. I mean, he goes to everything in his community. So they're looking for someone who comes across as honest, moral, has integrity. They want a candidate who's faithful in their marriage, so it's very important to see a candidate who's been married a lot of years, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't show any hypocritical behavior, doesn't break campaign promises. Those two are very important things. So if you promise something on your brochure, you need to follow through with that promise. They want candidates who value responsibility, dependability, and are willing to stand up for convictions, especially if that does not always align with their party. I think they really like candidates who come off as kind of mavericks on both sides of the issue. So they're looking for candidates who are open to having conversations, who are open to being bipartisan. They're hardworking, and this, of course, is the challenge that Utah has, is they're looking, a Democrat has to prove they're worthy of this personality test, whereas a Republican has to be proven unworthy. A Republican is assumed to meet that criteria.
Is that my last slide? Yeah.
All right, now I'm going to give it over to Craig.
All right, so I'm going to talk a little bit about LDS outreach, since that is my particular role in the caucus. So as far as we know, this is the first time that anybody anywhere has specifically designed a program to reach out to LDS voters. And you'd think that both of the parties in Utah would have thought about this a long time ago, especially back when things were a lot more even-handed between the parties. But as far as we know, this is the first time. So it's also unique in that the Utah Democratic Party, you know, we're a pretty small party comparatively. We don't have a huge amount of funding. It's a pretty small change operation compared to bigger states, but there's actually two people working full-time right now on LDS outreach. There were three when I was there. There's two people doing it full-time. So the interesting thing about what the numbers say, right, is what Crystal was talking about. Only 7% of LDS people in Utah self-identify as Democrats. And that number seems really super small, and it is. But the upside is that 36%, as you saw in those earlier slides, of people in Utah don't identify in either party. And if you take those numbers out nationally to the 17% of Mormons in the United States who are Democrats, that means that there's more than 1 million LDS Democrats in the U.S., right? So you put it in that kind of term, it's hard to feel like you're really such a small, insignificant minority if there's more than 1 million of you, right? So the outreach plan is kind of a fairly traditional field outreach plan. I don't know who's worked on campaign style outreach stuff before, but it's not so different from what a normal campaign would do for Hispanic outreach or outreach to women or outreach to students or anything like that. Except that because LDS culture is very insular in a lot of ways, there's opportunities to reach out to LDS people that you don't have in other places. Right, when you, I assume most of us here are LDS, not all of us, right? And regardless of where you are at in terms of your personal testimony or what you're doing, when you meet another LDS person, there's an instant ability to relate to that person in a way that you might not have with other people, right? So when you're, and I've seen this whenever I've traveled, and when I was in my undergrad, I went and backpacked around Europe with a friend for a couple of weeks, and we ran into some LDS people in Paris, and, you know, we just ran into them on an elevator, and we all instantly recognized each other as LDS, which is what happens, right? And even though we probably never would have spent any time with each other if we had met in Utah, we spent the next 2 days together hanging out in Paris, right? And that's just how it works, right? LDS people, we relate to each other, we immediately trust each other, and that's something that you don't have in a lot of other communities. Matter of fact, other than other religious communities, I can't really think of another organization where people would have that deep of a bond of trust immediately, right? So that's something that is unique to LDS culture that we have an opportunity to use when it comes to persuading people about certain things. It's also what makes our culture, unfortunately, prone to the sorts of investment scandals and things that you see in the affinity fraud, right? But the good side of it is that because we trust each other, we're willing to be open-minded if somebody who is LDS comes to us with an idea. We're willing to listen to that person in a way that we might not listen to other people. So a key... one of the ways that we are trying to take advantage of this particular aspect of LDS culture is that we know that LDS people are going to be more likely to listen to a progressive idea or a progressive solution for something, a democratic idea, if somebody who is LDS is presenting that to them. And you know, if you... To put it in blunt terms, if Nancy Pelosi shows up in Utah and says, we should do this, nobody in Utah is going to listen to her because they immediately distrust her. She's a Democrat and she's not LDS, right?
But and she's from San Francisco.
She's from San Francisco, right? Three strikes, yeah.
She's a woman.
Well, and unfortunately, that's partially true, right? And that's something that definitely needs to be worked on. But, you know, if your Relief Society president is a Democrat and she says, I like candidate X, I think you should take a listen to what he or she has to say, you're much more likely as an LDS person to at least consider that person, right? To at least consider that candidate. So what is
you're already known as the crazy liberal in your ward.
Yeah. It's true. And that's actually something to know. And I don't know how many of you are here because you're progressives and you're interested in this, or you're just kind of curious, but as an LDS progressive, that is the thing that most people want to talk to me about. They don't want to talk to me about my work, they don't want to talk to me about my other interests, they always want to talk to me about the fact that I'm a Democrat, which is very interesting. It's the same thing you find if you are LDS and you live outside of Utah, right? If you are a Mormon anywhere outside of the state of Utah, everyone wants to talk to you about being a Mormon because it's so different and weird to them, right? That's how being a Democrat can be sometimes here in Utah. But the way that we're working on this is our LDS outreach effort has been focused on finding people in each ward and stake throughout the Salt Lake Valley and throughout the state generally that are willing to host house parties for candidates. And so I should caveat here. We're talking a lot about politics in church terms here, and I hope that's not off-putting to anybody. In no way are we trying to suggest that you can only be a Mormon if you're a good Mormon if you're a Democrat or anything of the sort. But because we are Mormons and we're active Mormons, we've been Mormons our whole lives, and most of our membership is, it's the terms that we think in most easily. And so that's the reason why we use that kind of terminology. And again, when we're reaching out to LDS people, that just makes it a lot easier to use a language we all understand. So we're trying to organize parties for candidates where people in different wards and stakes can meet these candidates and have the opportunity to actually get to know them. And I'll talk a little bit more about why that's so important. Crystal touched on it. But the idea is that nobody who is a conservative LDS person, they're not going to be able to vote for a Democrat unless they actually know that person to some degree. Right? Just as being LDS signifies trust to us, and you probably all know, for whatever political persuasion you come from, the R, the D next to the name, is an indicator that you can trust that person, and the person who has the opposite signal is going to have to overcome your immediate prejudice in some way, right? And that is overcome most easily through personal contact. So I'm going to talk now a little bit about do's and don'ts and ways of messaging, and I actually owe this part of my topic to a fellow named Chris Bradford, who was actually in this room just before us. He's with the Mormon Transhumanist Association. He was talking about how to talk about Mormon transhumanist ideals, but I thought it worked perfectly for how to talk about democratic ideals, and so I've been giving this to candidates and to other people to help them understand how to talk to Mormons. So the key quote here is to be as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. And most of us, I think, are familiar with this scripture. Basically, you have to approach people in a way that doesn't scare them, in a way that doesn't attack them for their beliefs in a way that validates them and doesn't immediately put up their defenses, right? So let's go to the next chapter. So don't. So you will never accomplish your goal of changing hearts and minds without the personal contact. Right? Mailers won't do it. TV ads won't do it. You have to shake a person's hand. You have to talk to them a little bit. You have to become a real person to them. And all of us, again, I think we know this instinctively, right? Again, going back to the example of being LDS outside of the state of Utah, if you go to a place where people have never met LDS people, where all they have is the stereotypes that they've heard about, then they're immediately going to have some weird ideas about you. But the minute they meet you and talk to you, they realize most of their weird ideas aren't true. Okay? And as soon as you become a real person to them, they begin to overcome that prejudice. It's the same thing we've seen with the gay rights movement in the United States. Right? Most people who change their minds about gay rights in any way, shape, or form do it because they have a brother or a sister or an uncle or a cousin or a best friend or somebody who is gay, and having a real person there as opposed to a stereotype changes the way you approach it. Even if it doesn't change your opinions about certain particular policy matters, it certainly changes your opinion about that person and changes your willingness to stereotype other people. Right? So it's the same thing with being a Democrat in Utah or anywhere else where there's lots of conservatives. You have to have that personal contact and give them a chance to know you and find something else out about you.
Speaking of gay rights, can you comment on the activity of the church from Proposition 8? There are a lot of people really put off by that.
Yeah. Sure. And when you say comment on it, what are you looking for exactly? What's the...
The church was having, in California, having the missionaries take off their badges and go out and campaign for Proposition 8. And so the fact that the person is a Mormon, I think, would be anathema to a lot of people coming around and talking about politics.
And there have also been things about people in Utah went out to California and they said, well, you're from small town, little, you know, Roosevelt or Murray. Get with it. When someone asks something, don't appear like a huckster. Be briefed up on things. So act like you're from Sacramento. They say, where you're from? Oh, suburb of Sacramento. Now, we're taught not to lie and whatever, so if you're from Roosevelt, say you're from Roosevelt, but instead, be more sophisticated, try to act like you're from L.A. or Sacramento or Fresno. And I thought that was really duplicitous, bringing people in, making them kind of change their identity so they fit more with the California voter.
I hadn't heard that. That's interesting.
I'm from California, and I resented what the church did in the chapels and doing all the activities.
Gosh.
I mean, I was offended, and all the lies that the church produced, the members lying and misrepresenting things, it was agitating to every LDS, Democrat, Mormon in the state of California.
That's a very good point. My brother was fellowshipping a family ready to get in the church, and they were walking by and said, oh, there's a lot of noise in there. It must be one of their state basketball games. They went in and rallied for Prop 8, like balloons and everything else, and they said, what the heck is this about?
I didn't live in California at the time. I wasn't very aware of everything that was happening.
I mean, Californians resent Utah Mormons.
Yeah, every week we're talking about the general authorities. My bishop said I got tired of them, but every week I had to say this is the most important election ever. This is more important than Iraq or teen smoking or, you know, the environment. You've got to convince people that this is more important than abortion. I mean, it was bizarre. We're hearing this from the pulpit. From people that didn't necessarily believe it, but they had to recite it because Salt Lake told them to.
Sure. Well, and I think that illustrates a key point when I was saying earlier that when we are talking about stuff in religious terms, we aren't attempting to do that in the opposite, right? Our goal as a caucus and our goal as LDS Democrats should never be to get to a point where the opposite is happening, where our values are being preached, our political values are being preached over the pulpit. That's not something that we want. We want to get to a point where when somebody hears that you are a Mormon, there's no immediate value judgment, no immediate political association with that. And that's I think that if we move to a place where Mormon has no political connotation to it, that LDS Democrats has done the job that we're hoping to do. As far as Prop 8 goes specifically, I don't feel very well qualified to talk about that. On a personal level, I am very pro-gay rights, but that's not something the caucus touches, and the caucus is a big tent. We've got people from all different aspects. There's no litmus test to be a member of the caucus. We go from the most conservative to the most liberal, and Crystal and I are probably on the liberal side of the spectrum, but most of our membership is going to be further to the right of us. So as a caucus, we don't take any particular position on those issues.
Yeah, and we...
I mean, it's officially part in our bylaws that we don't take specific positions on issues because we want to continue. A lot of people were afraid when we became a caucus that we would become this big conservative voice in the party and that we would be responsible for making the party a lot more moderate than liberal. And we don't want to do that at all as an LDSM's caucus. We just want to be home for LDS Democrats, regardless of if they're conservative socially or progressive liberally. You know, like Craig said, he and I are both very liberal on those issues personally, but as a caucus, we just don't get involved in stuff like that. But he is going to talk about some ways about how to talk about it to get the average LDS voter to listen to you, because that's really what we have to do to make progress there.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Maybe I should wait. Your statistics, as pessimistic as I am and as angry as I am about the state of Utah politics, your statistics were worse than I expected.
That was the reaction I had when I first came to.
I'm really glad you're doing, but some of those issues that almost alluded to getting out of touch are extraordinarily important to me. And you talked about how well Jim does. And I like him personally, but the only reason I end up voting for him is because the other person's so much worse.
Well, we have to go through a little bit of that to get the candidates. You know.
Well, and this is an important point, though.
You know, but health issues, human rights issues, like gay rights, a lot of those are why I'm voting.
Have you always been a progressive?
No.
Have you always been? Okay, so this is the key, right? This is the key. Most LDS Democrats, I have found, and this is true for me as well, didn't start out as Democrats, right?
I didn't either.
And it's the same thing. Most people who convert to the church also didn't start out as church members, right? What happens is you begin to, at least for me, right, I began to realize that my values that I held as a member of the church weren't aligning with the things that the politicians that I was voting for were doing. Right? And no party's perfect. I'll talk a little bit about this more in the future. Right? Like you have to be willing wherever you are to admit that there are things that your party does that aren't in line with your values. If your party aligns perfectly with your values, you're doing it wrong. Right? That means that you're aligning your values to your party as opposed to trying to find a party that matches your values. Right? So I think it's important that we recognize that as a caucus and as people who are reaching out trying to make change, right, we don't need to confront people on every single issue. Right? If our goal were as a caucus, and it's not, again, if our goal were as a caucus to convince Mormons that gay marriage was okay, there would be no point to it, right? We're not going to change anybody's minds. We're not going to do any good. We're not, you know, it's kicking against the pricks, right?
And there's already great organizations doing that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So our goal is
LDSDems.org.
Yeah. So our goal as a caucus and in all of this kind of outreach, right? Your goal shouldn't be to try and turn people into carbon copies of yourself. Your goal should be to try to find the areas where you do agree and to help them understand how their values, the values they share with you, align on issues where you can work together. Right? And there's when you get down to it, there is a lot more agreement than disagreement. And I think this is the frustration everybody sees everywhere. Right? Our party, our system is so partisan right now. It's so divided that working together on those issues becomes difficult. Right? And so our goal as a caucus is not, again, to try and convince all Mormons they have to be Democrats. Our goal is to help people move into the Democratic Party who should be here and to try a missionary style to encourage other people to take a look at what we believe and move into it as well. I do understand the frustration, but that's why we choose not to take on some of those issues is because we can't win every battle. We have to be careful about which battles we pick.
As a Californian, I read the news and I follow what Matheson's doing in terms of voting for things, and I find that he doesn't support anything that's Democratic. I can't understand why a Utah Democrat would vote for a person who says he's a Democrat and never, never follows any of the things that we esteem that are important. I would not vote for him if I was registered and living in Utah because he's not a Democrat.
Sure. Well, some people feel that way about Matheson. I don't want to turn this into a discussion of Matheson necessarily. I will say though, I live in his district, and I vote for him because the alternative is somebody like Neil Love.
So to me,
a person who probably in another state would be a moderate Republican is far better than somebody who's a member of the Tea Party, right? And so I think that's the value judgment a lot of people make. Crystal had something she wanted to say on that.
Yeah, I mean, we're both progressive Democrats, Craig and I. And like we both said, we both didn't start out that way. We started out as Republicans. My parents are still Republicans, even though they're very liberal, but they vote Republican. And the more I tell them that they're liberal, the more conservative they become. So I've learned, don't tell someone that they're more liberal than they think they are. That's number one rule. But I had a personal, I mean, we don't want to make this about specific candidates per se. We're talking about how to reach out to LDS voters. But just on a personal level, you know, as a progressive Democrat, I used to have a very hard time with Congress Matheson. However, on a personal level, I mean, he's amazing. I don't know if you've ever met with him. He's amazing.
No, I haven't. Yeah.
And he's just really great. He gets down. He makes time for his constituents. He works hard for his constituents. And he knows what his district wants. And he knows the values of his district. And as mentioned, my other life is in the arts world. I'm the state arts advocacy chair. So I go every year to D.C. and I meet with the delegation. And all the other meetings that I go to, I get deaf ears. You know, they'll all say, oh, the arts are wonderful. No, I've never voted for arts funding. And the meeting with Jim is 100% different. He'll take 30 minutes. He'll meet with us. He'll ask us about all of our different issues. I mean, he's a politician who really cares about his constituency. And that's what his voters respond to. That's what they're looking for. And yeah, there are some more controversial liberal issues, you know, healthcare. He's voted against twice and things like that. And those are issues that are certainly important to us. But I mean, he has his reasons for doing that. And he knows his district more than anybody else does.
He wants the money that he gets as a politician.
No, he's an honest guy. If you meet him, he works for his constituents. He meets with his constituents. He goes to every community event there is. He visits schools. I mean, I've never seen a politician in Utah who works as hard to get to know his district than anybody else does. And that's why he wins. That's why he gets that 42% of LDS voters, and nobody else cracks that 20% threshold. And so, I mean, he is doing things that respond to them. And, you know, like we mentioned before, that LDS voter is looking for someone who isn't just going to march in lockstep with their party. And that speaks for Republicans, too. They don't like Republicans who just march in lockstep with their party. They're looking for politicians who are willing to have conversations. And that's when I was angry after the first healthcare vote, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to get involved with this Claudia movement, you know. And then I was talking to my friends who work in campaigns down south, and I realized, you know, if we always support politicians who only stick to one side or the other, are we going to go anywhere, you know? I mean, so I've really, on a personal level, I value politicians who are willing to have conversations, even if that means they don't personally always respect my values.
I love this state.
Yeah, let's keep going.
We'll carry on. If we have more time, we'll go back to that.
We're going on to 12:30, though, right?
We are.
Yeah.
Go ahead to the next one. Okay, so this is an important one. There are controversial topics. There are topics that are difficult. We've touched on some of them today. When people ask about those topics, you can't equivocate. You need to understand a bit about them. You need to understand where you are on that issue, even if that is, I don't know yet, right? But you need to be able to give a coherent, real response to people's legitimate questions. Equivocation in any sort of a scenario like that, it means you're either uncertain or you're trying to deceive, and in neither of those situations are you going to be able to change people's hearts and minds. And not knowing is okay. If you are trying to talk to a conservative voter about your progressive ideas and you aren't certain about something, maybe you don't know if you support gay marriage, maybe you don't know yet if you are for Obama's healthcare plan or whatever else, right? It's okay to say that you aren't certain. But the hemming and hawing and trying to explain something in a way that is going to... People can tell if you're trying to beat around the bush, and that is not productive that way. So again, a good example here is missionaries. Missionaries are the best at all of this stuff because it's what they do, right? You have a ready answer and be ready to share that at a moment's notice, and that's the best way to deal with that. Here's an important one, right? In a choice between faith and a political ideal, right? If you frame something, as Democrats have done, unfortunately, here in Utah a lot, if you frame something as being for poor people or... and for poor people and against the LDS Church, or you frame it as pro-gay rights and against the LDS Church. Again, all these things against the LDS Church, right? Anytime that it becomes a choice between faith and politics, faith is going to win, especially with LDS voters, right? All of us who are active LDS people, our primary allegiance, and this is true especially for LDS conservatives around here, our primary allegiance is to the church, right? So if you tell them, you must choose between your faith and doing the right thing, they're going to choose their faith, and they're going to assume that you are trying to trick them by saying it's the right thing, right? So don't make it a choice between faith and politics. Show them how being a Democrat fulfills their faith, right? Again, this goes back to the no particular political party is 100% with anybody's values unless they're aligning their values to that party, right? And you have to be able to show them where their values align with what you are trying to encourage them to do. And as I said down here at the bottom, this isn't going to work for all people, right? Some people are just not going to be convincible, and those are people that if you spend a lot of time trying to talk to them, you're just wasting your time. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't, you know, be polite or respond to their questions, but it means you don't spend a lot of time trying to persuade those kinds of people. If somebody never sees anything wrong with something that the Republican Party does, guess what? You're not going to get them as a Democrat voter regardless, right? It means they're not open-minded and thinking about things in a productive way.
Oh, were you?
Sorry. No, you're okay. You
good? Okay.
So again here, and this is another important point, right? And I run into this all the time. I am teaching something that I am imperfect at with this one, right? Which is don't argue with people and don't try and prove you're right. Now I am from a very conservative family. Now, family gatherings, everyone wants to talk politics with me. And I like to talk politics, so I'm willing to do it. But I find myself in arguments a lot. Okay? And arguments are just not at all productive. Again, going back to missionary example, nobody ever got converted because of Bible bashing. Right? You're never going to out-Bible verse somebody into getting baptized. Similarly, you're never going to out-general authority quote somebody into voting for a Democratic idea. Right? It's just not going to happen. People get entrenched in their positions, you just go nowhere, right? So when you have these discussions, you need to avoid arguing at all costs.
What about pointing out to them, this is what Jesus would do?
sure, which I find to be a very convincing argument, but I found that my family members don't. So, so here though is how you go about avoiding the argument, right? You have to have a sincere compliment on the tip of your tongue and ready to go. And by that I mean you need to be willing to acknowledge when they are right and what they are doing good. Right? As much as Democrats in Utah in particular, we feel like we're an oppressed minority and we want to just assume the worst of the Republican politicians in Utah, but guess what? They're doing a decent job, right? I mean, Utah is not some hellhole, right? It's a pretty decent place to live. And the fact that it's been run by Republicans would indicate that some Republicans have some good ideas, right? So we need to be willing to acknowledge when Republicans are doing things well, when the values that somebody is expressing, even if they are taking a completely different political position than I would want them to take, if they are expressing values that I would agree with, I need to be willing to say, I appreciate that you value X, Y, or Z. Right? By doing that, you approach them in a way that's productive. It sets a non-confrontational tone. It makes it possible to have a conversation with that person. And it's impossible to have a conversation with that person if your first word out of your mouth is you know, you're not following Jesus, for example, right? So that just sets the wrong tone. So let's talk about this one here. Another important part of setting that non-argumentative tone is to speak in a testimony-like manner, right? To bear testimony. And I gave this presentation actually to a bunch of Democrat politicians at convention, and I had invited some sister missionaries from Triple Square to come and bear testimony. it was probably the weirdest political training that ever happened in the state of Utah, right? But the sister missionaries, I brought them along and they were willing to come and help, and they bore testimony. The reason why I wanted them to bear testimony is so that people could hear the difference between a political argument and a political testimony, right? When I say political testimony, I mean this. You aren't telling somebody this is what you should believe. This is the right and this is the wrong. And if you're on this side of it, you're wrong, right? What you're telling people is this is what I believe. And I value this, and I see this value reflected in this political idea or this political solution. And it's a very different thing from telling other people what they should believe. And that's where power comes from. And it's just like missionary work, to go back to that again. When you are a missionary, you're telling people, I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe that the church is true. This is why I believe these things. And that's where the power of that testimony comes from. And nobody's going to feel threatened by that, because you're not telling them you're wrong. You're just telling them what you think. Let's go on to... Okay, so this goes back again to letting other people talk, right? So be willing to listen, and be willing to actually listen, right? Who knows, you may learn something. Right? Again, sometimes Republicans get it right. I'm loath to admit, but sometimes they do. And listening to them can teach you things and help you be better in your own policies. Now, that my caveat there, though, is true, right? I have an uncle who I just don't talk politics with. And I don't talk because he's crazy, right? And by that I mean his ideas are so far away from mine, and the way he approaches things are so different that we just don't connect in a political discussion. We're talking past each other, not to each other, and it's not productive. So when he wants to talk about stuff, I listen to it, I acknowledge it, and then I go and get some dessert, right? And that's how it has to go sometimes. But fortunately for most people, you're going to be able to have a conversation that matters. This is something that Crystal was talking about earlier, using familiar language in unfamiliar ways. The reason why this is important is, if you're trying to convince somebody of something, you have to give them as low of a barrier to go across as possible, right? And by using familiar language in unfamiliar ways, people are trained to listen to familiar language, right? You have the dog whistles, as we call them. And this is people talk about this a lot in politics, right? Democrats, our dog whistles are often equality, right? If something is unequal in some way, if there's something that's artificially keeping people from being equal to each other, that's something that Democrats tend to immediately have an aversion to, right? So if a politician talks about helping bring equal opportunities you guys know what I'm talking about, if you're Democrats, right? For conservatives, it's things like Crystal was talking about, self-reliance, right? The words liberty and freedom in their amorphous definition are things that are very important to talk about, right? And if you hear a Republican politician not talking about liberty, freedom, self-reliance, or those kinds of things, you're probably listening to a bad Republican politician, right? Somebody who's not going to get elected. So in those ways, when we talk to conservatives as progressives, when we talk to conservatives about our ideals, we need to use the language they're familiar with. We need to talk about freedom and liberty. We need to talk about self-reliance. Now, we can have our own families, right? We can have our own particular take on how those work. But sometimes I feel like we are loath to take the language that Republicans use and talk about it. We don't want to talk in terms of patriotism or flag waving or things, because to us, those have come to represent political ideals that we don't agree with. But we need to be willing to use those and have our own spin on them and not allow them to get so completely hijacked that we're unable to talk about them in our ways. And that's what is important.
Example?
Yeah, Crystal.
So like on the social issues, and there are people in our party who think to be elected, you have to be anti-abortion and anti-gay marriage. And maybe some of that's true in some areas, maybe not in others. But I think for those of us who are more pro to those things, you can change the way how you talk about it so that they'll listen to you. So like when you are talking about gay marriage, you could say, I love family so much. I love family so much. I want more of them, rather than just saying, I'm pro gay marriage, because then they're not listening to you. But if they hear you say, I love families, and if, you know, more of our more progressive people framed in that way, we might not lose so much of the conservative values. And same with abortion. I mean, that's another issue that's, you know, they're automatically going to stop listening to you in a lot of ways. But if you talk about agency first or freedom first, not having too much government in your lives first, they're still kind of listening to you in that conversation. So you throw in that familiar language any chance you've got.
Question?
Well, maybe an example, something that infuriated me in the last session was the sex ed ban of all, where the conservatives who assume that the church is, that they're speaking for the church, overstepped even the conservative. But the language that the governor used, there was that huge petition, and a lot of it was based on, and that's how I base my, you know, talk to the governor, is freedom. And, you know, this takes away my freedom to have for my children.
school.
That's actually
freedom is
a really
always
good
a good word
that,
to throw in.
That was an example of where a progressive ideal, it should be the opportunity to have sex ed in schools, was something that the majority of the state would actually agree with if phrased in the right language. And I don't mean that in some tricky way. We're going to trick people by using language that is deceitful. I mean that people in the state who cared about having sex ed in schools realized that this was a very easy argument to make in conservative terms, and they made it, and it succeeded.
One other thing that's been effective for me in talking to people is to get away from national issues towards local issues.
Sure.
You can talk about trust, you can talk about honesty, you can talk about education, you can talk about a lot of things that really resonate with local voters. You can talk about the tendency of the Utah legislature to forget everybody but themselves. Gee, that makes people mad. Conservative, independent, liberal, doesn't matter, makes everybody mad. Mm-hmm. So that's sure. a good way of getting
we grew a lot people. After the legislative session. Keep going?
Yeah. Okay, so here's another important point, right? When this goes back to, I don't remember who asked it, but they asked about whether you could challenge people who were just kind of wrong about something. It is okay to challenge people if you disagree with them. You don't have to create artificial agreement, right? If somebody has a political position that you disagree with, it's okay to disagree. But the best way to disagree is in a yes and versus a no but, right? And this goes back to acknowledging where they could be right, right? So if somebody comes to you, unless their position is just so totally crazy that there's nothing you could ever possibly identify with, which is very rare, right? I mean, I can't think of very many issues in which there's absolutely nothing to commend the other side, right? Unless that happens, you should be able to say, yes, I agree with you about X, Y, or Z, and here's the way I propose that we address those values, right? As opposed to, no, you're completely wrong because this is how I feel, right? That's a losing argument. The yes and argument, at least as Crystal was talking about before, keeps people in the conversation, keeps them from shutting down and going into a defensive argumentative mode, right? I think we've hit on this a lot. Oh, are we there? That was all of our slides.
That was it.
Cool. So and the long story made short here, right? And I think that this branches out just beyond LDS DIMS or just beyond the conversation about what we're doing here in Utah to the national level and to wherever all of you are from. Right? The key to this is that our LDS Democrats caucus, we are a big tent. We don't force people to take particular issues on things. We're accepting we're having a conversation. Right? We're connecting with people on a people-to-people level. And that's what's become missing, I think. Most people would agree. In the national dialogue, and it's what has caused the partisanship that we see. Right? So this is important to us as a caucus because we want Democrats to succeed more. We would like to see our government further reflecting the values that we have as Democrats. But it's also important, I think, on a level of societal healing and of our ability to function as a society, that we move from a position where we require that our politicians or our neighbors agree with us on certain litmus test issues or do things the way that we want, or we just won't deal with them. And that's I think, the problem that we are trying to overcome. It's what's happened to Democrats, partly by our own fault and partly by the fault of Republicans here in Utah. We're at a point where, as Crystal said, Democrats have to overcome a whole host of assumptions before they can get people support. And we need to move to a place where there's no longer that immediate association between LDS and any one particular persuasion. So I guess we've got about 20 minutes for discussion, if we want to have it. Sorry, lots of hands went up all at once, but I think you were first.
I just want to thank you. You've been a moderating influence. It's a work, and I have to admit one of my faults is I have become pretty angry. I argue.
I know. I wish that I had these lists. I wish that when I first came out as a Democrat that I had had all this wonderful work that Craig and I have put into this. I'm like, man, I wish I'd known this. I wish I'd thought about this way back then, because I think my family would still listen to me somewhat.
It's true.
Well, it's interesting that Brigham Young was a Democrat.
Yep.
And the whole church?
Yeah.
Until 1950, it was mainly the general authorities were Democrats.
Yeah. The interesting thing that Brigham Young said was that, you know, we shouldn't belong to either party too much because one side could take us for granted and the other side will ignore us. It's the same problem the black community has. They're ignored by the Democrats, taken for granted, and the Republicans, Democrats taken for granted. Democrats ignore us, the Republicans take us for granted, so we don't have any more clout from the black community when it comes to certain issues.
I think that's actually what you see happen with Utah these days, anecdotally. I mean, back in the mid-90s, when President Clinton was in charge, she pretty much ignored what Utah wanted in terms of creating creating wilderness areas, right?
So and the water district.
Yeah, and water districts and stuff. And that happened because he had no constituency to please in Utah, right? And similarly, right now, you don't see Republicans caring about Utah at all, except that they can raise lots of money here, right? So they come and they take lots of money, and then they go and do stuff for other people. And that's how it works because the state of Utah is so polarized right now in terms of being just a one-party system, basically. Right? And that's one of the things where I think the Democrats and Republicans alike stand to benefit from our work.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in Sam and Diane Stewart. I sort of had the idea that big Republican fundraiser parties were being held at their house. What happened?
Actually, Diane and I were recently on a panel for the Women's Democratic Club, and she talked about her conversion to the Democratic Party. And it's been happy. She did hold a George W. Bush fundraiser, and that was kind of a famous one. And they were pretty involved in that sort of a thing. And she likes to say that the Republican Party left her. And she is quite liberal, especially when it comes to a lot of social issues. And they've just become, they're wonderful people, they're wonderful funders of the Democratic Party, and they're just so involved and engaged in LDSMs, and I really enjoy working with them. So I mean, Sam and Diane are a testament to what's possible, as are Craig and I, as former Republicans. When we had our state convention, we asked our members of our caucus who were former Republicans to stand, and it was probably 80%. Stood, and I had to stand. You know, I'm a former Republican, I'm a registered Republican, I'm a college Republican at BYU, and I went to my first few meetings, and I said, I don't agree with any of these people. And that's what started it for me. But
yeah, indeed.
Actually, that's an argument. I got to stop saying argument, but I say that a lot of my Republican friends feel like their party is dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's why we say we're a big tent and we welcome you.
Yeah, we did touch on that a little bit, but we didn't go into it as much as I would have liked. Our success in recruiting right now is because with the Tea Party movement in particular, the party's moved a lot further to the right than a lot of Republicans are comfortable with. And that doesn't mean they become raging liberal Democrats, but it does mean that there's an opportunity to connect with them. You can say, like, you aren't such in agreement with the Republican Party anymore. Here's the things we do agree on. Maybe you should give us a thought. A lot of people are, right? And I interrupted you, but go ahead.
No, my question is, actually, I speak to all about thinking areas. And if we get into politics, one of them is the deification of a political stance, which I think is dangerous as
sure.
a liberal conservative. But there, among many conservative Republicans, they have deified stances. That's when it becomes unnegotiable or
mm-hmm.
non-talkable. I mean, this is from God. The church believes this. How do you address, because I think there has been a deification of Republican conservative politics to some extent.
Sure, I think I know exactly what you're talking about. I tend to put it in terms of gospel versus church culture. The gospel hasn't changed all that much over the years, but church culture has become very conservative, and there is some degree of crossover there, people confusing the two. If I knew exactly how to address it, I think I'd be giving a talk about how we turned Utah into a democratic state, right? As opposed to what our plans to sort of moderate things a bit, but. And I think the key is, just again going back to what we've talked about, the person-to-person contact, right? If somebody knows you, and they know that your values align with theirs, and they, you know, and if you're an active LDS person, if they see you in church every Sunday wearing your suit and your tie, right? I mean, there's a level of trust in that relationship that makes it possible to talk about things that might not be possible to talk about in other ways.
We've got a friend of mine in our ward is somewhat to the right of Attila the Hun. He came up to me one day and said, Alan, you're such a nice guy. How can you be a Democrat? And at that point, we could actually start talking about it. And one of the, with respect to the church culture, one example that I've used with him and with other people is that neither party, for example, on abortions, fits exactly what the church does. The Republicans are far, far to the right. The Democratic is far, far to the left. Neither one fits exactly, but both work with the church's definition. And once people think about it, they get this very puzzled look on their face, and then you talk to them.
Yeah, exactly. And if you
read the church's stance now on its website, it actually says that it takes no position on the legality of abortion. It talks about the morality of abortion, but not the legality of abortion. And that's actually, we used to have that on our website, but we took it off because we were getting too many people who would say, how dare you infer that the church is pro, abortion or whatever. So we took that off. I think we still have a link to it, though, so they can go there and read it and see for themselves what it says. But when I have that conversation with people, that is something that gets it started. But I think, you know, the key, again, what both of you have said tonight is, you know, it really does start on a personal level. And I would say for those of you who, you know, live in Utah or live elsewhere in Utah, I think the key is there's such a, and the statistics show there's such a distrust of politicians. There are low approval levels of the stalemate of Washington. And so I think a real key to changing that is to getting to know your local politicians, because I know many of them, and they are good people and on both sides who are trying to just make the world a better place. They're not out for power or whatever. And I think if you can say, well, I'm involved, and I know these people, and I know that they're not, you know, beholden to lobbyists or whatever, that communicates to people. And that's, you know, and we need to find more politicians who are the kind of people who just want to get out there and get involved and talk one-on-one with constituents, because that's what people need. And people really want politicians who are willing to have conversations and not just stick to one side or the other.
You know, it's interesting that you were talking about how conservatives feel that we're in a Book of Mormon cycle, pride cycle, because the Book of Mormon for Democrats, I think, is sort of the basic text for what we are.
Especially Mosiah and Alma, right?
Yeah. like last Sunday, we were going through Korihor and his arguments, which are that, you know, people succeed because they're strong and they're successful and they don't have to pay any attention to morality or anything else. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that that is kind of a basic Republican idea going around these days. Democrats can use the Book of Mormon to great effect in talking about why they're Democrats and why other people ought to think differently.
Yeah, sure. As long as absolutely. You personalize it and don't make it in a let me prove my point way, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but yeah, absolutely.
No,
I mean, there's the progressive tax and Mosiah.
On some of the materials on your website, you've got people saying, why I am a Democrat. And many of them are saying, King Benjamin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we hear that all of our meetings, people talk about King Benjamin. Yeah.
Seems to be a key part of the Book of Mormon for progressives. Yeah.
I have a couple of more words you can use. Bring up the Constitution.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you talk about the Constitution, it's good.
And also, you have to bring up the Founding Fathers.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's true. We actually, when we rewrote the Salt Lake County platform recently, we did talk about the Constitution a lot. That's a good way to get their attention. Absolutely.
Those are good familiar words and unfamiliar ways listed. I want to touch a little bit more on the Book of Mormon, actually, really quick, if we can. I think it's important for us to remember, right? That, you know, so I gave my caveat earlier about how we don't want to co-opt the church for democratic politics, right? At the same time, we shouldn't be afraid to talk about why we are Democrats and why we are progressives in scriptural terms, right? And I am personally a Democrat because I feel like my religious values, which are my higher values, best align with things that I see happening in the Democratic Party. And that, you know, if tomorrow the Republicans were to take positions that better align than Democratic positions, I'd be a Republican, right? Your primary loyalty, and most people's primary loyalty, if they really actually were thinking about it,
would be to those religious values and not to their political values. And so we shouldn't be afraid to express our political values in religious terms as long as we're careful not to do what happens so much, I feel, on the Republican side, which is to conflate the political and the religious values so that they're one and the same. And that's I think, where people are into trouble. But we absolutely should be willing to say, this is, I'm a Democrat because I believe that what King Benjamin said applies to X, Y, or Z policy, right? And that should be something that we're willing to say if we feel it.
It seems that we can distinguish between the fundamental positions of fear and hatred versus love and fellowship.
Okay.
And on the immigration issue, we've got... you know, Romney's saying, let's be so mean to the immigrants that they'll self-deport.
Sure.
And Trump says, you've got to love these guys, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Utah's done pretty well immigration-wise because the church was willing to say, you know, here are some values that you shouldn't forget about while having this political discussion, right?
And the compassion word's important when talking about immigration because that's what the church itself used when it backed the Utah Compact by saying, this is a compassionate approach to immigration. So that's another word to remember is compassionate.
I want to get back to the schism we talked about. It really seemed to be from the 60s on that we've become a Republican church. And I wondered if some of these things you've heard, I mean, granted it's old timers. My dad's 91, my mom's 87. They're born and raised in Twilla, Grantsville, Kaysville, Layton. And they still hear that from the old timers and also the younger generations coming up. But there was a famous talk that LBJ went to BYU. He said, we will win Vietnam. I can guarantee you that. I appreciate your support. And, you know, near the end of the war, I think Mormons are the only group along with Southern Baptists that supported the Vietnam War along with the Iraq War. The only two groups, according to Field and Gallup, who've been on the Ron Owens show, have said that the only two religious groups in the country that still supported Iraq strongly were Mormons and Southern Baptists, wherever they were in the country. Didn't matter whether you were from Maine or Oregon or Utah. You supported the Iraq War and said, we got to get in this thing to win it. And so what LBJ promised, almost like a prophet, we will win Vietnam, we will bring democracy to Asia. And it didn't happen. A lot of people were disillusioned with the Democratic Party. They said, here's a liar. He lied to our face. And then ERA came in the 70s, then abortion in the 80s.
Sure.
And it just seems like the Democrats have about 4 decades to make up with because of all these things have gone against them.
Yeah, it's not necessarily an easy task, indeed. But it's not an insurmountable task. And again, you know, I mean, I think that as a realistic Democrat in the state of Utah, it's not necessarily my end goal to see Utah become a blue state in elections. You know, I'd be quite satisfied with a Republican government that was more moderate and listened more to the concerns that I and other Democrats had. You know, and it's not so important necessarily who's enacting the policies as long as they're policies that address the things that our values focus on, right? So.
And one more thing I should point out, the one that ordered the extermination order on the Mormons in Missouri was Governor Boggs. That still has to resonate that a Democrat in this country in the 1800s ordered an extermination order.
Sure.
And the Republicans play that a big time. But Republicans may disagree with any group. We've never ordered an extermination around the Hindus, the Muslims, the atheists. But that's, even Netanyahu of Israel keeps repeating that. The only time an extermination order has been issued in America was a Democrat doing
maybe,
it.
Maybe we should put on our website that we specifically disavow Governor Boggs.
Probably.
anybody else? Or I
then a link to the history about how Mormons used all be Democrats.
I'm just wondering, it seemed like Governor Huntsman was a successful politician as a Republican, but he seemed to sort of be able to bring all comers to him, and everybody seemed to love him, and yet he could get up and say things like... we aren't going to have English only, or we're not. And on the other side, he would say, "We are going to have alcohol," and right. Somehow he didn't alienate anybody. And I'm wondering how is it that he did that?
I think he did it with this sort of thing. Yeah, I think that he is.
Well, no kidding. No.
I was never unhappy with Obama until he was.
Yeah.
And now the Republicans hate him because he was ambassador for Obama. That's the only thing
he turned. Yeah. No, but I think Huntsman's a good example of somebody who does these things well, right? Mm-hmm. Along with Matheson. Again, he's somebody who, even if at the end of the conversation he doesn't go the same way as you on a policy issue, he's had the conversation, right? He's expressed. this is where I think you are right. This is an important value. And you know, you heard him doing that in the Republican debates, actually.
He phrases
right?
liberal things yeah. in familiar words.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to why the Mormon members follow wars and are so proactive in that yeah. area when they themselves suffered what their history was.
Right.
And
well,
to take it a step further, this waterboarding and having it be Mormons that initiated and said that this was an okay thing to do
yeah.
to other people.
That was pretty bizarre.
I can't understand what is in happening to Mormons.
Yeah, no, that was interesting. And Jay Bybee actually came and spoke
yep.
at BYU Law while I was there. There's a bit of controversy about him coming. But I don't know that I am particularly well qualified to comment on that. I don't know if Crystal has any comments. But my gut instinct would just be that when you lose track, when you start to conflate your political and your religious values, that you start to take positions that may lead you in the wrong direction.
Well,
right? That's why it's so important.
You know, we say on the one hand, we don't trust government. Government's too big. And at any time the USA since 1920 has gotten in a war, we support it next to more than any other group except maybe the Southern Baptists. All the polls show that.
Sure.
It's bizarre.
Sure.
I don't see where it comes from either.
Can I just make a quick comment? I can't cite things, chapter and verse on this, but I do think that there's a current in Mormon culture that goes back to Governor Boggs
yeah.
that says, yes, we are Americans. Yes,
yeah.
we are.
Yeah.
And we got kicked out,
right.
and then we got back in, and then we were polygamous, and then we were this, and then we were that. And I think we still fight. I think a lot of the things that Mormons still fight about politically go back to this urge to say, yes, we are part of the American scene. Yes, we
are. The promised
are.
Land
yes, we
American
are.
Scene.
We're more patriotic than these other religions.
That's right. Look,
yeah,
we will go to
important.
War. We will
yeah.
do this.
Right.
We will fly the flag. We
right.
will do this. Because one time, a long, not one time, many times a long time ago, people said, no, you're not American. No, you're
right.
not. No, you're not. And I think it seeps very deeply into the gay argument as well. Like,
mm-hmm.
no, we are not sexual deviants. No, we're not.
Yeah.
See, they are,
yeah.
and never mind that we were
right.
at one time.
Yeah.
And I think we have some persecution issues that we have not gotten over yet. And it shows in America, in Mormons and their politics, because we're still trying to overcome what happened in the 19th century.
You're right. We didn't believe in one man, one woman until recently. You know, you're right.
Right.
We're trying to show that we're more pro-American than the Baptists are.
That's
that,
right.
That
we're more American than the Americans.
Yeah.
We're getting
extreme positions because of that.
Yeah.
We're still feeling inferior.
And it's going to get worse.
Yes.
I think we're going to get...
It's persecution complex.
You know,
it is.
I mean,
it is. Absolutely
you, you
is.
You hear it all the time. You
yeah.
see it. And I won't move to Utah. I won't retire to Utah because I want my vote to count.
Yeah.
And I know that if I come to Utah, I have
I,
no
I tell
say
you, if you moved
anything.
Into District 4 and voted for Matheson, you'd have a vote that counted, actually.
Because he doesn't vote for anything that I stand for. So why should I vote for a guy that doesn't vote for
anything?
Because
his opponent would really make you mad.
No, it's you.
I have one last question.
Absolutely.
I'm kind of an edgy Mormon, you know.
I guess I should caveat this because I talked a lot about the influence you can have as an active LDS person. Right now,
right.
I should clarify on the caucus level, as Crystal said. Right, we have people who aren't LDS at all, people who are LDS, people who are active LDS, and everybody's welcome. And that doesn't mean that you don't have an opportunity to influence people.
So the tent's big enough for.
The tent's big enough, and you should be there, and you can still have an influence on people, right? I focus on the active part because we put so much thought into how to get the people who are in the chapel on Sunday to vote for Democrats, but that doesn't at all negate the influence and the strength that comes to the Democratic Party from people who aren't active LDS.
But
so.
It's a good reason for me to go to church.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and honestly, I tell you what, you know, if you went to your bishop and said, Bishop, if you come with me to a campaign rally, I'll start coming
back
to church.
To
I guarantee you. Right? So take advantage of it. Go ahead.
Take our home teachers to the Democratic caucus.
There you go.
Actually, I think edgy Mormons are really good to be in the caucus because they relate so well to the many independents and Republicans
sure.
who are not LDS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And those are in Utah, too.
So,
yeah.
Maybe Brigham Young had it right when he said the left side of the chapel you vote Republican, and the right side
right.
you vote Democrat.
You
that would be the best thing the state ever had.
I agree.
Nice.
Well, this is
mind, but I love the fact that you're talking about reaching out to people and the verbs to use and everything like that. But I kind of feel like I've been in the mid-single scene forever. And, the scenario is always, like, me in the kitchen with three or four different guys, and they're jumping down my throat. So for me, like, I think what you're saying is great, but I came here because I feel like I need support. I feel like I'm the only Democrat. You know, sure. My family's moderately liberal, but it seems like in the mid-single scene, I'm the only Democrat there. So I feel like I need support out there.
Come to our executive committee meetings, man.
I to get on the website and just feel like I have a group that supports me because I
feel
like I've been the lone wolf or the lone lamb in a pack of wolves for 15 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's really an overwhelming comment we hear from people who join us. I'm so glad you exist. I thought I was the only person in all of Utah who was a Democrat. And the reality is there's so much. I mean, we got an email the other day from someone in Arizona. Do you remember where she was from? Somewhere outside of Utah. And I think she was a recent convert. And she was like, I'm just looking for other Mormon Democrats to talk to. And so, you know, we said, well, we're focused on Utah, but here's a bunch of websites and a bunch of blogs to get involved with and listservs and things. And so certainly that's why, you know, one of our two purposes is providing a home, because we all do feel alone.
Yeah, people act like you're an idiot.
I thought I was the only one when I started thinking.
They act like you're just ridiculous.
Yeah. Paul?
I just wanted to say one thing to be in here. My name is Paul Pugmire. I'm the Secretary of the State Democratic Party and a committed LDS member. There are two things that I want to leave in your minds about this. Number one, most importantly, not enough can be said about the heavy lifting that Crystal has done to make this happen. Most all of it does rest on her shoulders, and she is to be applauded.
Well, thanks, Paul.
Second point is exactly to what, Sister, what you were saying, if I may address that slightly. This group is new to the Democratic Party, and I don't mean officially, although that's true too. I mean that the people who are attracted to it, who are coming to it, are overwhelmed.
They've never been involved before.
New to activity in the Democratic Party. It is growing the party, it is growing political activism. It is a home for a great many people who thought they had no home. You are welcome there.
Oh, yeah. I just want to speak to that for a minute. You know, when we started, we thought it might be, because those of us who were involved in the political party in LDS, you know, Paul and I, we knew each other, we knew we were LDS, Craig, you know, Trish Beck, Ben McAdams, you know, we thought it might be a lot of people like that. And it has been people who have never been involved before, who have never been delegates before, who are now delegates. They're getting involved in campaigns for the first time. And so that's part of what's really exciting about our caucus. It's all new blood. The people, when you come to our executive committee meetings, it's not the people you see at every other Democratic function that you go to. And, you know, sometimes you're a little sick of them. But these are all new people who just really want to make Utah better, and it's been really thrilling.
So I think we're actually out of time, but thank you all for spending an hour and a half.
Just pass along cards if anyone wants some.